RTE 2FM.
This week, it's 2FM Studio 8 Week.
Listen on the RTE Radio app.
Right now.
This is 2FM's Game On.
And a big thanks to Dira and all the gang on 2FM Drive. It is Monday the 10th of March. I'm Andrew O'Connor and you are listening to Game On. Come up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock. We'll cross to Cheltenham where Ruby Walsh will set the scene for tomorrow out of the loudest roar in racing. David Matthews is just back from Apeldoorn in the Netherlands to assess Ireland's half-hour medal haul at the European Indoor Championships in soccer. Alan Cawley talks League of Ireland and Premier League. Well, in rugby we hear from a philosophical Peter O'Mahony as Cian Tracy looks at what is next for Ireland after that Six Nations defeat to France. Plus, it wouldn't be Monday without our weekend sporting highlights. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200. Yes, welcome to Monday. It is so busy this next hour. I am delighted to say joined in studio by Alan Cawley and Cian Tracy. And gentlemen, what a weekend of sport we had. Some of it good, some of it bad.
Well, Cian's is all bad. Mine was quite good.
I did see some of the athletics. I saw some of the athletics, so it made me, you know, kind of ease the pain of the rugby on Saturday for sure.
Well, I think that salvaged everything, the athletics did it.
Yes.
Because it was all... It was all built up to Saturday afternoon in the Aviva, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I know we're going to get in and talk about it properly, but I mean, if you were French, you had a great day out. And so did the, I think they reckoned there was 10,000 French supporters there. And this happened in 2023, the previous time that France were in Dublin for the Six Nations. The travelling support was incredible. I mean, they all wore their blue, which doesn't necessarily happen when Irish supporters go and wear their green at the Aviva Stadium. And the noise they made was incredible. Look, they had plenty to shout about, but I'd say the French had a good weekend in Dublin for sure.
They had a great weekend and they spent all their money, which is great for the local economy. But yeah, what a performance from the fans. Although, you know, their players did them proud on the pitch. They literally sang for the whole 80 minutes.
And they were in situ from early on as well. Look, anyone who's listening who's been lucky enough to be at a big game at the Stade de France or even be at a top 14 or a Champions Cup game in France, you'll know that it's different gravy over there, the way that they get behind the team. It's absolutely incredible. I think as Irish supporters, we could probably learn a thing or two about it. There was times at the weekend where it felt like a home game for France. And look, obviously the Irish rugby team have to give the supporters something to shout about, and there wasn't a whole lot of that at the weekend. But some of the rugby that they played was just absolutely scintillating. I don't know if I give away my weekend highlight now or if I'll wait. But
wait, keep us on tenterhooks.
I'll keep you on tenterhooks.
Yes, yeah. Alan, let's start with you. Where would you start with a weekend highlight?
Well, I have only one this weekend, Andrew, but it's a good one.
Okay,
and it's a big one.
Okay, he's setting it up.
We're going back a few months now to when we were in studio. Kevin Doherty delivered a big win for Drogheda in the FAI Cup final. We were all overly excited with that, and we were thinking next year, yeah, that's all good and well in terms of where they're at, the club, a huge moment for them, but it's going to be an even bigger task next year to stay in the division. And everybody had them tipped to go down. I never felt that was the case, but I did think they'd be down there kind of battling it out, which I still think they may be. But in terms of a start to the Premier Division, it's been absolutely unbelievable, Andrew. They're sitting top of the table. They've played five games. They've won three, drawn two, and only conceded one goal. And the highlight of those five games came in Talca Park Friday night when they went to Talca Park and beat the champion Shelburne 1-0 with an unbelievable goal from young Warren Davis, if anyone hasn't seen it over the weekend. Probably the goal of the weekend as well. So in terms of starts and all the talk about the Premier Division, I think Drogheda are absolutely stealing the show right now, and it's an unbelievable start. When you consider the resources and the budget and all those things as well that come into consideration, they shouldn't be anywhere near where they are, and it's been a phenomenal start for them.
It's been a very unpredictable start to the League of Ireland Premier Division this season, isn't it? We'll get into it in more detail in a while, but from week to week, just a couple of the clubs are really consistent and they're not the ones you expect.
Yeah, it has been really unpredictable, Andrew, and I suppose that's the beauty of it in some ways. But all the teams that were being tipped to be battling it out at the top, and it's only early days, I still think come the end you will see the likes of Shelburne, St Pat, Shamrock Rovers battling it out. But certainly in terms of the start, you have Drogheda on top, Waterford second, Galway fourth. Nobody really would have envisaged that you would have those two at the top, especially. So I think my takeaway so far from the opening five games is that it's probably the most competitive division I've ever seen. And I think we're going to see plenty of situations like we've seen with Drogheda even beating Shelburne as the season progresses on. You will see, and I don't think any more of the real underdog stories, because the teams are really closely matched. I think you will see a lot of maybe surprise results because it's so competitive, which I think makes for a good division. But as it begins to settle down after maybe a series of games, teams settle down, I do think you will see a couple of the big boys that have been tipped at the start still battling it out at the top.
Okay, that's a good weekend, start of a good weekend highlight. Keane, back to you. We're on the anticipation is building for Keane's highlight of the weekend.
Well, I'm going to give a couple of honourable shout outs because obviously like I said there wasn't a whole pile shout out from an Irish point of view, but I think seeing three legends of Irish rugby, you know, play their final game, Peter O'Mahony, Keane Healy, Conor Murray, obviously not the ending they wanted, but it was, yeah, just incredible, I suppose, to see them off, like what they've given the country over the last few years. Something I think that's gone forgotten about because of the result is that Dan Sheehan set a record at the weekend by becoming the Six Nations history all-time top try scorer for a forward. He scored 10 tries and he overtook the likes of Jamie Heaslip and Hard Nordicke, the France legend. So there are two honourable shout-outs. But in terms of a moment from the game, I just thought Louis Bié-Barrais' second try was just a moment of sheer brilliance and summed up, I think, France's power initially, because Ireland actually had the ball and France counter-rucked them, blew them off the ball, and the way they just switch mode into the counter-attack, Damien Penno running through, needling a ball through, and then Louis Bié-Barrais, look, the little gorgeous little chip in behind. I know there was a few people who were maybe questioning, did he lose control of the ball when he went over the line? I was a little bit surprised it wasn't checked by the TMO, but I think you give the benefit of whatever doubt is there probably to the attacker. And it was just a moment of sheer brilliance from a guy who is only 21 years old, has the potential to be a real star of rugby.
There was one from the game as well, Andrew, that I had seen, and it was that lad, Bié-Barrais.
Yeah.
That wasn't bad.
LBB will go it.
LBB, right? And something that struck me, I couldn't believe it. I've never seen it on a rugby pitch before. When he caught the ball, Ramos, I think, was lying on the ground and just threw it back to him. But he kicked the ball across, and I obviously have to go back, I know that much, but he kicked the ball backwards across the other end of the pitch. I've never seen that.
It was the equivalent of don't pass the ball across your own box in
square
football.
Ball is absolutely
It was unbelievable. Again, so French, but just so brilliant. I mean, like, I'd say the coaches were just sitting there thinking, what the hell are they doing? But this is why we love the French for what they do. And maybe Ireland could learn a thing or two in terms of that unpredictability. I'm not saying that madness, but they're just so unpredictable in terms of what they do. And like I said, in terms of my highlight, a joy to watch.
Yeah, phenomenal, phenomenal performance by the French team. And Keane Healy's try as well. I mean, it was, I know, not the circumstances he would have wanted, but he just reminded us right at the end. You know, he was unstoppable. I know it's just the last couple of metres, but they're the last few metres that France were stopping Ireland all day.
Exactly, yeah. And like that guy redefined, I think, what modern props do. Andrew Porter has obviously come in and taken over the mantle, but when Keane Healy came on the scene, props were not playing as they are now. So, like I said, he's Ireland's all-time appearance holder now. Three incredible servants. It's just such a pity that they didn't get the farewell that their careers probably deserved.
Is it a case, Andrew, and again going back to the chat we had with Bernard here the other night previewing the game, and Bernard spoke about their style and how expansive it can be, and they play a different brand from everybody else, and like that it's a joy to watch when it clicks, Keane. And you mentioned here maybe Ireland could learn a thing or two. Are the two kind of structured, the Irish team? Because the French team doing things like that, obviously the manager allows them to express themselves in that way. Mm-hmm. Because there's no way a manager would be encouraging it. Like if you're in a structured environment like Ireland, that any of our wingers would be kicking the ball backwards like that.
Yeah, and like that's obviously a moment that could have went badly wrong, but I totally get your overall point that you're making. And look, that's been Ireland's super strength over the last few years, is their structure and how they sort of have to outthink the opposition, because as we'll get into, I'm sure, talk about properly in a while with Andrew, we don't produce power athletes, we don't produce the pace that France have, so we have to come up with different ways of beating teams. Now, that served Ireland really well over the last probably decade, since Joe Schmidt took charge, really, was when I think Ireland started to change. But I think teams have now started to figure it out. And there's definitely a call, which is, I think, the point you're making, Al, is that we need to have something a little bit different. You can't just rely on that structure. Now, I don't mean that James Lowe should start kicking the ball across his own post to Mac Hansen, but you just need something a little bit different.
Yeah, of course, or even from a creativity point of view, because that opening, and I know you're going to get into the chat now fully with Andrew, but on the match, but they struggled to break them down for 15-20 minutes when they'd all the ball at the start. So that little creative spark.
Yeah, 100%. And they were missing a couple of their creative players, like James Lowe pulled out in the warm up. Mac Hansen was injured as well. So that was a big issue too. But I think going forward, yeah, Ireland are going to need to add another couple of strings to their bow if they want to keep pace with the best teams.
Mm. My highlight of the weekend, before we go to David Matthews and talk athletics, is the athletics, because it was a 36 minute period where Ireland actually won one gold and two bronze. A fantastic 36 minutes for Irish athletics. We seem to do all our medal winning in little tight bursts of time for the last couple of championships. We'll ask David about that, but it's probably just down to timetables. But yeah, brilliant victory for Sarah Healy in the 3000 metres, and of course two other bronze, Kate O'Connor as well. What a fantastic young athlete she was. 14th in the heptathlon in Paris in the summer, and just a couple of minutes later she's got the bit between her teeth, and she pulled out a brilliant performance all weekend to get that bronze. Let's go to David now, double Olympian David Matthews, one of my favourite times people to speak to when we're talking athletics. David, good evening, and have you recovered from a long trip home from Appledorn?
Yes, good evening, gents. Yep, great trip. It makes the trip home a hell of a lot easier when you're carrying a bit of silver or bronze or gold and bronze silverware on the way home. But yeah, it was a fantastic weekend, medals raised a whole expectation just on from the boys. We were watching the rugby during the sessions on Saturday, and we were beginning to build up a bit of a steam of momentum and success with the track and field in Appledorn, and then the loss in the rugby sort of sucked a bit of momentum out of us. But we came back with that magic 35, 36 minutes of just outstanding performances by our athletes, and we got sport onto the front pages again.
Let's also start with Sarah, and she's had so many disappointments, as you and Greg alluded to, over the last couple of years. But both her parents were there to see her romp home, and she looked so much in control of that race. It was just great to see. She never looked like she was panicking. She just always looked like she was in the right space at the right time.
Yeah, and the writing was on the wall, Andrew, on the Saturday in the semi-final. She did something very similar. You know, it was just like a coiled spring, and she was ready to pounce. But the woman that was second, Melissa Courtney Byron from the UK, she was the fastest in Europe. She was the outstanding favourite in that race. So there was no, you know, it was all to do for Sarah. But she, you know, she, as you said, she's had, you know, her share of success at an underage level, but also she's had her share of disappointment and just not clicking. We all know she's an exceptional talent, but the way she commanded the final 200 metres, moving up on the shoulder of Courtney Byron, and over the last 20 metres, just, you know, kicked down and dug and passed her in the last 5 minutes, it was a joy. And I met her mum and dad leaving the stadium last night, and there was hugs exchange and relief, and I just said, you know, celebrate the good times, because, you know, they're hard come by, but that was a thoroughly deserving gold medal, and it was a relief all around for her.
Let's hear her now. She was talking after her victory with Gary Moran.
I've been able to run fast the last few years, improve like that each year, but I've just kind of struggled a bit in the high pressure moments, like at championships, to kind of perform to my potential. But I think the biggest shift has definitely been like a mental one this year, just taking a bit of pressure off and trying to just enjoy things a bit more. So yeah, I felt really calm and in control today, and it's kind of a new feeling for me, but it's really nice. So yeah.
So when you came here, say this week or last week, so you're looking ahead to these, are you feeling, yes, I'm in a better place?
Yeah. I guess I've never done European indoors before, actually. I've done every other championship, and this is kind of one you would like to do first. I suppose it's like the stepping stone championship, but I've always been injured the last few years. So I knew it was a really big opportunity for me. Coming into it, I just really didn't focus on the outcome at all. Everyone says, you know, focus on the process, but that really was a big thing for me, and just trying to like go through the same process I go through for every race.
Plans and hopes for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm actually off to Dubai tomorrow for a training camp before World Indoors. And I'll run the 3K there, which that's a straight final, and I imagine that'll just be quite a fast race. So I'd love to go there and do as well as I can, and then take, you know, a week's downtime or so, and then get ready for outdoors. Yeah.
It's a busy couple of weeks for Sarah. David, when are those Worlds? How quick are those World Indoors following?
Yeah, they're Friday week, actually. It's 21st to 23rd of March, so it's in Nanjing in China. So it's a World Championship that's been held over after COVID. It was postponed in 2021, so that's the reason it's falling so close, because it never would fall like the way it is in the same year, Euros and things. So that's the reason for that.
So there'll be quite a big Irish team going over to that, and there'll be a lot of confidence on that team.
Yeah, there'll be a big... The team won't be as big, Andrew, I wouldn't say, as the European Championships. You know, obviously the medalists and those who qualify in the top 10 will make... So probably Athletics Ireland are looking at a team of about 10 or so, which will make that trip over. So, okay. Yeah, positive medals. You know, it's the next rung in the ladder in competitiveness. That's the thing, you know. There was 48 countries in the European Championships there at the weekend. You know, it goes over the 100 countries being represented in the indoor. So there you go. In the World Championships. So, you know, with that comes the competitive nature. You bring in the United States, you bring in Africa, you bring in, you know, Australasia. So it does, the bar is raised, if you pardon the pun.
Indeed. Let's talk about Kate O'Connor, talking about raising the bar. She, amazing performance from her. She had 5 events, and she had a personal best in 4 of those events. She obliterated her own Irish record. What a performance from her.
Yeah, like, we started very early yesterday morning. It's a blur to me now at this stage, but 9 a.m. in the arena, and she got off to a tremendous start with a personal best in the hurdles, and that set her up really nice. She was 6th or so in the combined total, but there was a pivotal point in this, and I think without this moment and her succeeding, it was in the high jump. Around 10 past 10, she had 2 attempts. She got 3 attempts at each height. She had 2 failed attempts at 175, and somehow she summoned, you know, the energy and resolve to clear that 175 and high jump. If she had failed to do that, the medal was off the table. It was gone. Her, you know, her European Championships was over. But not only did she clear the 175, went on to 184, and then, as you said, had a personal best in the long jump, shot put through thing. But going into the final event, which is the 800 meter, the narrative behind that was that she was approximately 20 points behind O'Dowda.
Which is about 2 seconds, isn't it?
Yeah, and myself and Greg had the shoes and socks off and fingers and toes counting, trying to do the calculation to see what it was. So it was approximately 2 seconds that she needed. She was behind in the overall time. And what she does, the gun went and off she went. And we looked at one another and goes, what's she at? Because I thought her personal best in our times wouldn't suggest to us that she was going to be able to run it, and she did, and it was just unbridled joy and thoroughly deserved. Like,
and she beat O'Dowda by over 4 seconds in the end. I think it's
the younger sister of Colm O'Dowda.
Colm O'Dowda, the footballer.
So there's a crossover there on that. But yeah. It was brilliant to get another medal. You know, maybe not as expected as Sarah's medal, but you know, it came, and that was part of that magical 36 minutes.
And it's an amazing sport, because it's one of those. I mean, it just doesn't happen, and you can have a whole day watching the pentathlon and watching them all at their individual races. So if we got an athlete involved and competitive in the pentathlon, there'd be a lot to watch for Irish athletics fans on the television.
Yeah, listen, it ticks so many boxes, Andrew, you know, running, jumping, throwing. And as you said, it's sprinting, jumping, throwing. They're the epitome of all-round athletes, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, I hope, like what the mixed relay and the women in the 4x4 relays did last year, I hope that putting the heptathlon and pentathlon and what Kate O'Connor has done will inspire, you know, the younger generation and girls to get out and try the multi and combined events. I think they're superb role models, as we saw over the last year or so. And I think here's another one to add to the team of fantastic sports people we have.
And we're going to hear from her in a minute, but I just wanted to ask you a question about Kate. She has won medals pretty much at every level, all the youth and junior levels that she has been competing at. Do you expect her, and she made a comment as well that a lot of the people, or all the other athletes that she was competing against the weekend, are professional, and she is still in her studies. Do you think if when she finishes her studies, she can sort of turn all her attention to athletics and become even more competitive than she is now?
Yeah, two things, right? Heptathlon and pentathlon, the strong parts of the world is actually in Europe. They're stronger in Europe than maybe any area of the world. So it's much more competitive in Europe. Secondly, the nature of the event, pen is five events, hep is seven. The physical and technical demands that's required by Kate to deliver that. Like, just imagine, you know, in a sport, whether it's rugby or soccer, well, you train for soccer, you know, every day. She has to hurdle, high jump, long jump, shot put, javelin outdoors, and 200 meters outdoors. So the workload is the first thing, right, Andrew? It's huge amount of workload. And then couple that with the technical element required to be proficient and world-class in the throwing and jumping event. Listen, I don't know how they do it. They're just superhuman beings.
And she's studying for a master's, so all of that training she's just doing on the side. Anyway, let's hear from the amazing woman herself. She's been talking to Gary Moran as well.
I gave myself lots of mini heart attacks during that high jump competition. And while I was in it, it probably wasn't the most enjoyable thing because it was such like high energy. But I think that it's definitely a competition that I look back on and I'll be like, wow, I was able to hold my nerve very well there. And I've seen a few videos come out and my celebrations are always a little bit out there, but I suppose it just shows how much it means to me.
We'll come to the 800 in a sec, but what else from the five events was a critical moment for you?
Definitely the long jump. I mean, like, I went out there and I jumped a huge PB. And if I'm being honest, I left it and I was happy with the PB, but I actually shed a couple of tears because I was like, oh my goodness, I've just put in four world-class performances and I'm still trailing these girls. And I knew it would take something special in the 800 metres. And I wasn't sure whether I'd be able to produce it or not, but yeah, I gave it absolutely everything out there. I left my guts on that track, and thankfully it paid off.
But when you towed the line for that 800, you knew you probably needed to win, and just by as much as possible. So there's probably not too much tactics to talk about. It's just how did it feel during the race?
Well, actually, to be honest, we did have a race plan. So the girl that was in front of me was 30 points ahead, and the plan was to track her and with 300 to go kick and try to put 3 seconds between us. And, well, that obviously went out the window. I started off and I put myself in a decent position and I was like, right, let's just go. Let's leave everything out here and have no regrets. And yeah, with a lap to go, I felt good and I kicked for home. And as I was coming around the last bend, I was asking myself, how much do I want this medal? And yeah, I was just able to kick on. And as soon as I crossed the line, I turned around and I tried to count. And yeah, I then knew I had the medal.
And there's tons of work that goes on behind the scenes. And in a pentathlon or a heptathlon, more than most, you're not popping up in Grand Prix and all that kind of stuff. We don't actually see you compete that often. So to produce for yourself and for your support group, how's that feel?
Yeah, definitely. Well, like, one major thing is I'm not a professional athlete, and the two girls that finished ahead of me are, and the girl that finished below me also is. I'm doing a master's, so technically I'm only doing athletics part-time. It would be amazing to be able to do it full-time and be a professional athlete at some stage, but I just haven't had that opportunity yet. Maybe it'll come now, I'm not sure. But yeah, it means so much. The work that goes on behind the scenes is insane. And yeah, the support that I have, I wouldn't be here without the guys. So yeah, I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody that's helped me.
One of the busiest women in the world, that is Kate O'Connor. We did have a third medal earlier, of course. Letterkenny's Mark English won a bronze medal to add to his impressive medal collection now in the 800 metres. Let's hear from him.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. It's kind of a combination of everything, really. It's more volume and more speed work. And yeah, it's nice to see it all come together. Got to give a fair bit of that credit too to my new coach, Justin Rinaldi, who been coaching me kind of since October time, so it's brilliant.
What made the difference in the few months that you've been with them? You know, what's changed?
Well, I have actually doubled my training volume, so that's been a big difference. And like, I suppose he's just been an 800 meter runner in the past. He's an Australian champion as well, so he knows the kind of nuances of 800 meter running. And best 800 meter coach in the world, as far as I'm concerned. You have Josh Howie there running 143. Like, it's like a 149, 150, you know, it's crazy what he's doing. Great group to be a part of. It's brilliant when you're not the best in the group because it pushes you. And yeah, it's amazing.
So are you in this now for the long haul?
Well, we'll stick together this year and we'll see what comes of it. I'm kind of playing it by ear at the minute.
That is Mark English after his brilliant bronze medal in the 800 metres. David, that was your event. So were you impressed by Mark and his new coach and the manifestation of that new coach in his performance?
Yeah, I actually know Justin Rinaldi. I knew him before Mark did, yeah. We would have soldiered together down under training. So yeah, Justin, so I know him very well. Justin's an incredible coach. And Mark, even in his interview there, he doesn't panic. He's as cool as they come. And that was evident in his heat semi-final when there was nearly no room to get out. There was some beating heart in his heat. He was caught in the curb and nothing was happening. He couldn't get out coming down the home straight. He just opened up like the Red Sea. He found a gap. He doesn't panic, Mark. And, you know, he's delivered medals for us on the European stage, you know, all the time. 5 European medals. And he's actually running better than he's ever had as he approaches his 32nd birthday. So, listen, it bodes well. I think it's a fantastic partnership. And, you know, it's looking good for him in China and the World Indoor Championships. And then later on in the year, we have the World Championships in Tokyo out there, where we'll have Rashida Adeleke and they all come into the equation again. So it's going to be a busy time between now and then for track and field athletics.
And before I let you go, it's not all about medals. Were there any other Irish performances that you wanted, that you think we should take note of from this championship? Great performances and personal bests.
I think we have to give a hat tip to Sarah Lavin, Emerald AC. She was fourth in the 60 metres. You know, it's the loneliest spot that you can finish in fourth, just outside of the upside of medals. But you know, she's a brilliant campaigner. Credit to the sport, and in particular hurdling. I thought Andrew Coskren as well ran a very brave race for sixth place in the men's 3000. Listen, European athletics is very, very competitive, and to come fourth or sixth in their respective events, you know, it's a hat tip to them, and you know, a huge congratulations. Just because they don't get the medal, you know, the medalist gets the highlights and the spotlights, but, you know, they're very, very commendable performances by those two, Sarah Lavin and Andrew Coskren.
David Matthews, it was a pleasure to listen to yourself and Greg Allen all weekend, and thank you very much for joining us on Game On this evening.
Game On Rugby.
Welcome back to Game On. It is 6:33 this Monday evening and it is time to talk rugby. Yay! Usually that's an enthusiastic conversation. This week it's just a little bit difficult. Cian Tracy joins us in studio. Cian, we're going to hear from Peter Mahoney in a minute, but we were just talking. I was talking. You said something was exactly what Don Lennon said to me outside today. Ireland have been probably overachieving slightly for a couple of years now and France have been probably underachieving for a few years now, and on Saturday the balance equalised.
Yeah, I definitely think it's been more France have been underachieving more so than Ireland overachieving. But if you look at the quality that this team has had, this is a golden generation of players. Everything was building towards the 2023 Home World Cup. And look, they lost, similarly enough to Ireland, the day after Ireland lost to New Zealand, they lost in narrow margins to the eventual winners, South Africa. But I was over in France for that and it was like the country went into mourning. I know we obviously suffered more World Cup quarterfinal pain, but it was nothing like what the French were feeling over there. Everything was building towards it. Galtier's job was under pressure. He survived. They drastically underperformed in last year's Six Nations when Ireland beat them on the opening night in Marseille.
Yes.
And you were kind of thinking Galtier could be out the door here. And there was a lot of pressure on Galtier going into the game this weekend.
And the French squad was very similar this year as it was last year.
Now, they were missing Dupont and Entomac last year.
They are two big names.
And obviously Dupont went off injured in the first half. But Entomac is, because Dupont is so good and they play together, Entomac is almost underrated because he flies under the radar because the scrum half gets all the kudos. But I think we saw at that World Cup how badly Entomac was missed. But to get back to your point, this was a statement victory from France. Like, they're obviously, well, not obviously, but looks like they're going to go on and win the Six Nations, they haven't won it for the last 2 years because Ireland have won it. And this is a golden generation. And if anyone saw the under-20s match on Friday night and look at the job that the French under-20s did to the Irish under-20s, it might be getting a little bit more painful for Ireland before it gets any better, because the French talent pool is just enormous. You look at the top 14, you look at the Brody 2, two professional leagues, and they have a huge amount of talent coming through. So look, they're finally starting to deliver on their potential, but that was a statement performance and a statement win, I think, of the Galtier era. It really was.
We'll get into the nuts and bolts of that in a minute, but let's hear from a man who sort of his name dominated a lot of last week, along with two others. Peter O'Mahony, of course, amongst those that announced his international retirement last week. He spoke to Damien O'Mara after the defeat.
What sort of a week has it been for you from a personal point of view?
It's been a great week. I've loved it, you know, being around the lads, you know, having the family up kind of earlier in the week and trying to take it all in, you know. It's of course, it's emotional, but, you know, the main thing was the match that didn't go our way, but, you know, we've another big performance ahead of us next week.
Could the young fella who walked into Conn all those years ago have ever envisaged 113 caps for Ireland, all the silverware you've won, Leinsters? And I don't know how much you appreciate yourself, but you're an icon of this sport, and you will forever be an icon of this sport in Ireland.
I appreciate that. No, you couldn't have sold it to me. You know, it was definitely a dream to play for Ireland and my province. You know, your country is your pinnacle, and to do it as many times as I've had, it's kind of a pinch yourself moment, really. You know, I've been very, very lucky with the people around me and the teams I've been involved in, and you know, I want to go. I'm going to enjoy next week.
Yeah, so. Hard to step away though, because it's not just such a part for you, but it's such a part of the family's life as well. And you know, we can see this here. You've built such a family environment in this squad that, like, I know you were quite emotional here last year when we spoke, but it's everything has to end at some stage.
Yeah, that's life, and you got to move on. It is tough though. You know, some of my best friends play for Ireland, and you know, our families are intertwined. You know, we spend a lot of time together, some of us, and even the guys who have come in over the last 3 or 4 years are, you know, a big part of this group is they have to be good people, and they're all good people. You know, I love spending time with them, and it's going to be difficult to be away from the group, but I'll keep in touch. You know, I'll keep in touch, and you know, myself and Cian have booked a holiday already together, and with a few of the
what's seldom is wonderful,
the other past players. Yeah. So we'll keep in touch, and it's just important.
That is Peter O'Mahony. He's about to go on holidays with Cian Healy. There's an image. And Conor Murray, also the other man who announced his retirement from international rugby last week. They still have one more week of duty left. We're straight into the Italian build-up now.
Yeah, I suppose the big question is, will they be involved this weekend? Because, look, they've had their farewell. In my mind, you know, the Italy game this weekend, obviously Ireland can still potentially win the title, and that will probably ultimately influence the decision.
Go on, Scotland.
On Scotland and, and Wales as well against England. But for me, this game this weekend should almost be the start of, you know, rejuvenating the team, getting guys like Jack Boyle onto the bench, who was excellent in Cardiff and obviously made way for Cian Healy at the weekend. Look, Craig Casey is out injured. But I think we need to start seeing a bit of fresh blood, and I don't think there's any point in almost wasting the game this weekend, because I think Jack Boyle even would have deserved his place in the 23 last weekend. So, look, there's mathematically possible Ireland could still win the Six Nations. And with that in mind, Simon Easterby might just see the summer tour to Georgia and Portugal, which is going to be a development tour as the very start of that. But I'd like to see a few younger players involved this weekend for sure.
Can I ask you a question about perspective, and probably from a fan's perspective as well? We won the Triple Crown. We won the first three games. And we're entitled to think, okay, well, if we can beat France, then we have Italy and Rome, and, you know, a Grand Slam could be on. You're entitled to think that if you win your first three matches. But really, are Ireland already in a team in transition? Are those expectations, were they unrealistic? We can say yes, they were now because they lost to France. But are we really a team in transition, and were our expectations far too high this season? Are we already in the middle of a transition?
I think we're going to see it in the summer. I think that's the real turning point, because you'd imagine there'll be a lot of Irish guys will go on the Lions tour. Like I said, Ireland, it hasn't been officially announced yet, but Ireland are going to Georgia and Portugal, which will be a development tour. So that's a chance to start get guys in. They've got a stacked November where they're going to Chicago to play the All Blacks. They're playing the world champions, South Africa, in Dublin as well. So I think that's where we'll start to see the transition. But In terms of the expectations, I think that's maybe a little harsh when you consider that Ireland won the last two Six Nations. They had a shot at history here to become the first team to ever win three titles in a row. So I don't think it's unfair to expect Ireland to have gone and delivered on that, particularly when they had England and France at home. They're generally the years where your expectations go that little bit higher, because obviously it's tougher to win in Paris or it's tougher to win in Twickenham. So they'll be look really disappointed. Tony Ward had a brilliant line in the Irish Independent today, I thought, where there was a bit of World Cup quarterfinal syndrome, I think, to the weekend. Because, look, it was a de facto Six Nations final. Mm. And you have to tip your hat that France were awesome. Like I said, statement victory, statement performance. But Ireland were blown away and did not deliver anything like their best performance, which happens at the World Cup quarterfinals as well. So I thought that was a really good line from Tony Ward, like I said. And they're going to have to figure out why that is. Is it a mental thing? Is it a physical thing? Because it can't keep happening in the biggest games.
Could that defeat have been the best thing that happened to this Irish squad?
Possibly, because it's coming now 2 years before the World Cup. So there's loads of time to look. I hate when people like look through everything through the prism of the World Cup, but they've got a big wake-up call. It's not a wake-up call that anyone in Ireland wanted, but if France had arrived and didn't show their best and Ireland ended up winning the Six Nations, perhaps it would have papered over a few of the cracks. Whereas, as it turned out, I think their deficiencies were laid bare, like I said, by an awesome French performance. And by the time Andy Farrell comes back from his Lions sabbatical, he knows that he needs to start changing things, I think.
Keane Tracy, thank you very much for joining us on Game On in studio this evening. As we say, chapeau to le bleu.
Game On. Soccer.
Welcome back to Game On. It is 6.43, almost 6.44. We've got about 3 minutes to talk soccer. Please stay with me for the racing chat with Ruby, will you?
I will, absolutely.
That's brilliant.
I wouldn't leave you on your own, will I?
Thank you very much for that. Ruby's got a whip in his hand. Always do the company there. English Premier League. Let us start. Is the league over? Liverpool won. Arsenal held to a draw.
100%, Andrew, yeah. Gone. Done and dusted.
Let's start with congratulations to Liverpool. 3-1 winners over Southampton, having their pretty much one of their worst seasons ever, Southampton. Liverpool having one of their best. But I'll credit them. They keep winning.
Yeah, they absolutely deserve it, Andrew. They're 15 points clear, and that speaks volumes just in terms of the season that they've had. Arsenal were supposed to be the challengers
this year. How good were Man United? How bad were Arsenal?
We'll come to those in a minute, but just certainly in terms of Liverpool, they do deserve a lot of credit. When you think Klopp obviously left at the end of last season, and the speculation over who the new manager was going to be, Arne Slot was a bit of an unknown name to a lot of people. Anyone who watched Dutch football or certainly European football would have known who he was. But it's a big jump going from the Dutch league, obviously, to come over and manage the likes of Liverpool and following the footsteps of Jurgen Klopp as well. So not many people had Liverpool down to win a league title or even challenge. I certainly didn't. I thought they may challenge, but I didn't think they'd win the league. So the job that he's done has been absolutely remarkable and deserves huge amounts of credit, to be fair to him.
Speaking about remarkable jobs, Nottingham Forest beating Man City on Saturday and into third place. They don't look like they're going anywhere.
No, I don't think they are, Andrew. And that's what we've been kind of speculating for the last number of weeks. Can they hang in there? I think you're right. I think they will hang in there. They're Ruby's favourite team all season. He's been mad about them. And Nuno, again, as you say, deserves so much credit, because when you think where they were last year, struggling, and obviously the jump and the transformation in that to get them third in the division. And if they can finish in the top four, that would be like winning the league for Nottingham Forest, with the Champions League fortunes that will come their way as well. But he's done a brilliant job, and I'm at the stage now with 10 games to go. I hope to do stay there, because up to now, 28 games in, they're on merit. You'd love to see them finish the job, Andrew.
Absolutely, and a European qualification awaits, brilliant, and all of the money that brings.
And a club with such history as well. Like, we all speak about the Liverpools, Man United, all that. To see Nottingham Forest back up there as well, two-time European Cup winners back in the day, it's fantastic.
Down the other end of the table, massive draw for Wolves. Everton went 1-0 up, but Wolves, that draw makes them, is it 6 points clear? Yeah, they're 6 points clear of Ipswich, third from bottom. So Wolves are now fourth from bottom, 6 points clear. That's just the sort of gap you want at this time of the season to sort of kick on.
Yeah, absolutely it is, because the goal difference is in their favour as well. So it's like an extra point. And that's, I suppose, what they just have to keep doing, just keep knocking the points on. Because you look at Ipswich, Leicester, Southampton, the run of form that all of those clubs are in, they're not tacking any points on whatsoever. They're being beat most weeks. Leicester again beaten by Chelsea. Ipswich lost at the weekend to Crystal Palace in a game that they would have kind of seen pre-match that it might be a winnable game. So yeah, it was a good point for Wolves, and it'll be delighted just to keep them at arm's length, those bottom teams.
Now, Newcastle tonight, they have a big game. They're away to West Ham United. Hopefully, after the racing, we get to talk about that, because there might be team news and Everton Ferguson news as well from that. So we will discuss that after the racing. But after the break, day one of Cheltenham, it's all coming with Ruby Walsh.
Game on. Racing.
Yes, it's day one of Cheltenham tomorrow, and who better to talk to than Ruby Walsh, who is live in Prestbury Park preparing for his television coverage tomorrow. Before we go through the race card for tomorrow, Ruby, just a quick note of the changes to this year's festival. The Grade 1 2.5 mile novice chase has been removed and replaced by the 2.5 mile novices handicap chase. Do we have anything else to worry about this week?
Yeah, it does, and that'll be on Thursday, Andrew, which looks like being a really competitive race. I suppose from an overall point of view, to look at tomorrow's Arkle with only 5 runners, and then the Brown Advisory on Wednesday with only 7 runners. So that's 12 runners and 2 Grade 1 novice chases. And the fact that there's only 2 of those from Great Britain, they've only 2 runners in the Supreme Novices Hurdle as well. It doesn't paint British racing in a great light, and that goes back to the supply chain. Where are all the horses? Where is the supply? You would imagine you should have more numbers than we have at the moment. But look, that's a bigger issue and a bigger argument. And it most certainly isn't Cheltenham's fault. That is the industry behind the sport. And that industry has to have a look at itself.
And one of the big stories of today, day before day one,
is that Willie Mullins has come out defending his position on Lossie Mout. She's going to run in the mares and leave Constitution Hill alone tomorrow. Any surprise for you there?
Not for me, I don't think there was. I think the hope was that Lossie Mout would develop into a champion hurdle mare. She did win first time up in the Hatton's Grace when she beat Chupu. That was a slowly run contest. She didn't learn anything new there. And then she went to Kempton at Christmas and she wasn't able to cope with Constitution Hill. And she just about beat Burdett Road, who made a bad mistake at the last hurdle. That was a long way shy of champion hurdle class. And then unfortunately she fell at the Dublin Racing Festival before you knew how she was going to get on. So ultimately, she didn't prove herself a champion hurdle horse, and Willie has changed tack and dropped her back into the mare's hurdle. But I don't know, there is different ways of looking at it. I think she's in the race, that she's the best chance of winning, and I will be always of that mindset. To me, I was never someone that really enjoyed taking part. I was more interested in winning than I was taking part, and I think she's in the race that can win. Some people won't like that, but I think she's in the right race.
Let's stay with the champion hurdle now and Constitution Hill. I suppose Brighter Days Ahead will be one of the horses that'll hope to challenge. Do you think he has a chance?
He does. He sets the standard. But look, the horse that won the 2023 champion hurdle, Constitution Hill, was amazing. But I think since that day, Andrew, I'm not sure he's reached those heights again. He was disappointing. Well, not disappointing. He won, but he wasn't as good when he beat Sharjah at Aintree after that. He then won the Christmas hurdle at Kempton in 23 when he beat Rubo, but it wasn't a blowaway performance. He missed 12 months then. He had a few setbacks. Now, he was never injured, but he was still ill. He had colic. He had time in his stable. And like any athlete, horses are no different. When you miss time and you miss training, it's hard to be what you once were. So he won at Kempton this Christmas. I didn't think it was spectacular. He won here in January when he won the Unibet International Hurdle. It was a walk in the park for him, but it was a substandard contest. And I think he has it to prove tomorrow. If he's the horse he was 2 years ago, he will most likely win. But he has to be that horse because Gordon Elliott's mare, while Lossie Mout didn't prove herself a champion hurdle horse, Brighter Days Ahead most certainly has. She won the Morgiana when she beat Stateman, and then she went to Leopardstown at Christmas for the Madison, and she blew the opposition away. She was brilliant in Leopardstown, and she's on the rise, whereas it's very easy to argue that Constitution Hill is stagnant, if not regressing. So I think tomorrow's champion hurdle will be a cracking contest. I'm with the mayor. I'm a believer in youth and a believer in the improver, and I think he'll give Constitution Hill all he wants of it.
Now let's start off with race one, because obviously it's going to be a very emotional race for a lot of people in the equine world. The Michael O'Sullivan Supreme Novices, it's going to be called tomorrow. And a classy touch by the race organisers, Ruby, but a great way to start the festival. And of course, we look forward to that brilliant Cheltenham roar that gets us all so excited.
Yeah, and it'll be a different roar tomorrow. It'll definitely be an emotional roar with Michael O'Sullivan's name on the race. you know, Skybet were keen to do this, but they were keen to do it, Andrew, once the O'Sullivan family were happy to do it. Once the O'Sullivans thought that it was the right thing to do for Michael, and there was plenty of liaising there, and the O'Sullivans were delighted to have Michael's name put on the race. So between Cheltenham and Skybet, they have called the Supreme Novices the Michael O'Sullivan Supreme, because he won the race a couple of years ago on Marine National. And it is a fitting tribute to a very talented young man who sadly won't be at Cheltenham and is sadly not with us anymore. But yeah, a great way to remember a very talented and a lovely young man. But look, the race will still go on. It's the Supreme. It's always a great race. Nice size field. Copec the board sets the standard, and it's a really good race. You have work ahead for Henry de Bromhead, Romeo Coolio, William Money, William Mullins has a couple of more, including Salvatore Mundy and Carabao. But it'll be a good race. Hard to oppose the favourite, Copec the board. But look, there's always upsets in Cheltenham too, and there's four really short price horses tomorrow afternoon, and I can be sure the four of them won't win.
Now, Ruby, you'll be delighted to know that Alan Cawley is in front of me, and he has got opinions on the Arkle Chase. Alan, how do you see that one going?
Well, I think I'm not the only one that's fancying Madge Brandad. Is that right, Ruby? Everybody right, is kind of tipping him, and some people suggesting he's the nap of the week.
He could be. I mean, he was good in Leopardstown. He should have improved from that race. But look, Andrew, the only certainty in this whole conversation was that Alan Cawley would have an opinion.
And the right one it normally is as well.
Yeah, sure, look, no one's going to doubt that, Al. No one's going to doubt that. But Majbara, yeah, look, he does look really well since he travelled over. He was very good at the Dublin Racing Festival. I saw him this afternoon, actually, in the parade ring, and he was strolling around, happy out in the environment. And look, a bit of rain fell this afternoon as well, which wasn't forecast, and that will definitely be a help for Majbara's cause. So he looks rock solid. I maybe touch me not, or could be the one to chase him home, Lotus Sud and Django Byer, the English representatives. But Majbara was really good at the DRF, and it's hard to get away from him.
Just for Willie, Ruby, I suppose, like, and all the talking has gone on now, all the previews, we've had all the chat, all the speculation, and it does feel a little bit like Christmas Eve, I suppose, for all us racing fans. But just for the people heavily involved, the likes of Willie, you've been there, done it, the likes of Paul Townend, just give us an insight, I suppose, into what they're thinking tonight, and how, I suppose, is there apprehension amongst them, and they're just itching to get it going now?
It's that nervous wait. You know, you're ready to go, but you have to wait until race time. It's the same as the night before a match. But it's down to tactics now, Alan, and what way you see races. Like, even this afternoon, I saw Paul walking the race course this morning, and as there were many more Irish jockeys, Rachel Blackmore was out there, and Keith Donoghue, and then you get 4 or 5 mil of rain, and all of a sudden you're thinking, whoa, that's a different race course now. And, you know, they'll be factoring that into tactics, trying to work out what the opposition are going to do and what's the best way to ride your horse. So that's the kind of thing that jockeys will be doing tonight. And look, everyone will be looking for the best part of the track. And, you know, unfortunately, what will happen is that someone will, or most people will, overcomplicate things. And after a race or two tomorrow, all the tactics they decided tonight will go out the window, and they'll just revert to basics. Mm.
And Ruby, after two races, sometimes people are broken after two races. Sometimes they think they're just about to start the move to their pinnacle of racing success. But the ultimate is the third race. Let's fly through the other races. I suppose the Changing Man is the one to beat there.
Probably is the one to beat, competitive handicap chase, and I think it'll go to the home team. I think Melina Girl is probably the best of the Irish. Maybe Search for Glory has a chance, but I thought it was a really tricky handicap, Andrew. I thought, I can't even remember the horse's name now, Lucinda Russell's, Whistle Stop Tour. I thought that had a chance, but again, that would only be a token gesture. I thought some of those handicaps, there's reasons the bookmakers have all the money, and most of them are handicaps for the reasons the bookmakers have the money.
Did you ever see a bookie on a bike? That's what my auntie always used to say, and the answer was always no. Now, moving on to the Mayor's Hurdle, Lossiemouth obviously not in the Champion Hurdle, but she does make an appearance here, and I suppose Jade DeGrugy would be the main opposition in that one.
one.
She probably is, but from a betting point of view, I'd say Carla Conti is the one at an each way price, or Joyous of Nicky Henderson's. They probably make more appeal to me to be the ones to chase home Lossie Mountain. Look, it's a horse race, anything can go wrong. So you're getting a bit of value about Joyous and a bit of value about Carla Conti. So I wouldn't put anybody off the two of them. I do think Lossie Mountain will win, but she has to go and do the job.
Okay, we've talked about the champion hurdle earlier. What about the Fred Winter Total Luck Stencil Beyond Your Dreams? Pick your horse.
Yeah, or put your hands together as well. I like Beyond Your Dreams. I think that she has a pair of cheek pieces on. JJ Slevin rides her. I think if she can jump a bit quicker, she's really well handicapped. So, look, I've liked her for a couple of weeks now, Andrew, and I'm not going away from her tonight. I think she'll love the place. I think the hustle and bustle of the race will really suit her, and I think she's got a great chance.
And finally, the National Hunt Chase. Is it Now Is the Hour or Jericho Rogue?
Jericho Rock. Excuse me. And that is one of the changes to the festival. This race used to be a novice. It's now a novice handicap and it has a full field. So it's definitely benefited from the changes. What do I think? I actually like Resplendent Grey for Ollie Murphy. I think the step up and trip will really suit him.
Are you excited for day one, Ruby?
I am. I can't wait for it. I love Cheltenham. It's a great theatre, great setting, great atmosphere. It's magic.
And we'll be speaking to you tomorrow night. In fact, we'll be speaking to you after each night, hopefully, of the races. So we'll get your rundown and your preview of the next day. Enjoy the festival, Ruby.
Looking forward to it, Andrew.
Enjoy, Ruby.
Enjoy, Ruby.
Cheers, Al.
Game on. Racing.